call a meeting to order.
We all know each other. Does everybody know these? This is a good one.
Why don't they introduce themselves?
I'm Sandy Dawson, I'm the comprehensive planning manager, and I'm not gonna stay for the whole meeting, but I wanted to come and just observe for a little bit.
Rick Donovan, befuddled citizen, coming for a meeting.
Phil Farrington, I work for CDC Management for the representative owners of the property across the street.
Agenda review.
Questions?
Public comment?
No comment?
No comment.
What's the latest and greatest thing going on in downtown?
Lots of stuff. I don't think you can tell me.
Well, just like real quick.
And approval of minutes, 11/9/17 meeting.
Then I won't get a chance to review the minutes. So our last meeting was in November, and remember, it was the sign code discussion, so it was pretty intense. That's why there's so many pages of minutes this time. We usually don't have this much.
A lot of answers.
Yeah.
Looked good to me.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I was not at the meeting, so I'll stay.
So next item was update from staff. So I wanted to follow up on the sign code amendment. So the committee completed the recommendations on the downtown sign code amendments at your last meeting. Those recommendations will be forwarded on through the process. And we're also doing a citywide sign code amendment. So we're gonna decide if we want to move that forward as part of that citywide or as a separate amendment. So I'll keep you posted on that. So we'll do public, when we do the public involvement for the downtown design standards with open houses and more outreach, we will be including the sign code as part of that. But the actual adoption of it may be separate from this code amendment that you're working on tonight. Does that make sense? And the reason for that is that there's items within that that are also part of the citywide, so they kind of need to go hand in hand, or they need to go after. So it's just a correct order of business. And then just another note, so the streetscape standards that we started looking at, I think at one of our walks we did, those are being reviewed internally right now, and you will see those either at your next meeting or the one after. And those, more of the streetscape amendments are actually gonna be part of the development code as opposed to the engineering manual. It's a lot of procedural stuff, I know, but for the committee's purpose, I don't think it really matters, but we'll explain that more when we review the streetscape standards. And again, that's based on advice from the city attorney's office. Any questions about that? Okay, good. All right, well, I do have a lot of images for tonight for us to go through, and I think I'm gonna sit up there because of my glasses that I need to use. So if you look at your agenda, you'll see what we're gonna talk about tonight are site design and building form design standards. So we have the streetscape standards that are out there on the sidewalk, all those things that you see when you walk down the street. And then the building form and site design is about private property and how the private property development faces the sidewalk. Can you guys hear me if I sit up here?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay. All right, so just a review of what you've completed to date. The sign code amendment recommendations, and then the other item was the defining characteristics. Remember all the slides we looked at with the different pictures of downtown and the items that we would like new development to reflect? Those also went to the city council. So that is the basis for a lot of the work that you're going to see tonight and in the next meeting. Just a refresher of the area that's included in the downtown mixed-use plan district is the land that's currently plan designated and zoned for mixed-use development in the downtown. It's also designated for nodal development, which means walkable, pedestrian-friendly design. So the boundary you can see, there's a, one of these maps is also in your packet. And for anybody that's new, you might want to check that out. So we are going to be talking about some locations tonight, so we might want to refer to that map. Any questions about the boundary? I know it's been confusing because we talked about a sign code boundary last time, which is more extensive than this one.
I have a question.
Sure.
Where the bus station is not included in this. It seems illogical that that line wouldn't include that.
Yes. Well, I agree, but that is not in the mixed-use designated area. So when we adopted the mixed-use zoning back in 2005, for whatever reason, they did not include the LTD station and the park and ride facility that goes with it. Yeah. And we were directed to not do any plan amendments as part of this project, so that could be a follow-up later.
Can you stir things up?
But I agree with you. Oh, and just to go back, so the work the committee's doing tonight and the next two meetings, these are amendments to the Springfield Development Code. So that affects new development in Springfield. These are the land use regulations that would be applicable to new development and to redevelopment if it's significant, including some of the standards will be applicable to exterior renovations of buildings as well, but we'll talk more about that when we do facades. So the city council, when we went had work sessions with them about what are the defining characteristics of downtown that we think are really important to hang on to and to base new development regulations on, some of the things that we talked about were the block size, walkable blocks, the way buildings front the street right onto the, directly onto the sidewalk. So that's the foundation of these standards. So here's an example. Was one of the attributes that the council said yes, we want this is walkable, equal scale blocks with storefronts built to the sidewalk. And so then this code needs to describe what those standards are that are going to make that occur with the development occurs. So basically what you're doing is translating those goals into design standards that will be in the development code. The other thing about this project is that we're calling some of these items a form-based code, which means the form of the building and how it meets the street is actually more important than the use that's inside. And so the goal, I think, for downtowns like ours is to have development standards that really allow us a lot of different uses to occur over time, because who knows what uses are going to be needed next year or in 5 years or 20 years, but that the building form and design is going to be more of a timeless design that will accommodate lots of different things in a flexible way. So that's why the frontage standards are really so important. Any questions about that or discussion? Does that all make sense? I just thought this was a good diagram that I found about the public realm, public space. And a lot of the, what we're trying to do with this chapter of the development code, it's something new for Springfield, is to incorporate a lot of photographs and graphic images, not just diagrams, but actual photographs that illustrate and provide examples of some of the standards that we're going to include.
Will they just be images from Springfield or outside?
I think they're going to be both. And so some of the images that are in the slideshow tonight are things that are in the draft that we're working with so far. Sometimes it's hard to find just the right image, and we'll probably need to go out and actually shoot some photos that are more specific to a specific item as we get further into it. But, you know, for discussion purposes, I think it's really important to have the pictures be the foundation of it instead of just drilling down into the details of X, Y, and Z and 2 feet here and 3 feet there. So as we start this, we prepared a list of purposes and outcomes that we're trying to achieve with the building form standards. And so what I was hoping to do tonight is to actually go through these with you. There's 8, I believe, and I have copies of them in your packet as well if you want to take that home and think about it more, or provide notes to me by email later on, or bring them back to the next meeting. But I was hoping that we could kind of get agreement that these things are really important. And if there are any that you don't agree with or don't feel that are important, it would be good to talk about that, or at least flag those for now. Everyone know what adaptive reuse means?
I assume the idea that you'd be able to go from a restaurant to a office to a retail in the same exact building.
Or it could be something like turning an auto body shop or an auto, like the Volkswagen place. I guess there's a development issues meeting about that property right now that came in. So somebody might want to convert, what is that, an auto, some type of an auto business into some other use, a cider place, or a brewery, or an office, or whatever. That would be an adaptive reuse.
Question, so if, in understanding, it may be difficult to get to this point, but if the goal is for majority of the standards be, I use a term from statute that's not meant to apply in commercial settings, but clear and objective, so that they're easy to follow and implement, and there's not much discretion involved.
Yes.
And the purpose statements simply serve to reinforce what those standards are meant to achieve, but in and of themselves. Would there also be an opportunity for applicant or developer to vary from those standards, in which case these purpose statements would be used in a discretionary setting?
I think that's how our code is set up right now, and I'm anticipating that that's how this will be in the future as well, is that people could use a discretionary use process. And we also have our attorney looking at this very issue right now to give us guidance about that.
So in that instance then, is there value in providing maybe greater clarity around what the downtown's unique character and charm and, you know, just, I guess, character in general is?
Yes, I think so.
Something to put on the parking lot, I guess, for future discussion.
Yeah, and we're not reviewing the full text of the proposed code yet, but that's what we're working on right now internally. But again, you know, if these are the things that we think are important, then we will be more specific about what those are and how those are codified.
Sure.
Very good point, though.
Is there any benefit to rating these top 8?
Sure.
You know, 3 is...
Whatever you like.
Works
fine.
Welcome.
Jo Lynn's going to take notes, and she is recording, so we can capture what you say tonight. And
otherwise, I think the purpose statements in themselves capture, you know, the general intent of having that pedestrian-oriented streetscape and like a state of your buildings that relate well to the streetscape, encourage that mixture of uses, facilitates that critical mass and diversity of uses that, that results in a healthy downtown commercial district.
Does anybody object to any of these statements, 1, 2, 3, 4? Or have questions or disagreement or?
That's where I am.
Okay.
Look good to me.
Okay. Should we go on to the next, number 5? So harmonious relationship, that's one of those things that needs to be codified in clear and objective standards, right?
Five and six kind of contradict each other a little bit. One talks about on an edge, and the other one is, you know, placement, relationship to scale, and other buildings, and setbacks. Mm-hmm. The facade up to that edge necessarily defines, you know, the vertical, or the...
Mm-hmm. Number six to me is the use of the harmonious relationship. It's always that, as you said, not very specific. It's almost a freedom of speech issue of interpretation. Good example, and I will always reiterate this. I love the Roman Forum because you got different types of buildings, you have different styles of different structures, and because of the oddity and uniqueness of each building, it kind of adds to the whole thing. Sure, there's certain mathematical, architectural structure that you want to do. As long as we keep that, it's okay.
John, can I ask you a clarifying question? So, are you concerned that number six is more about the full lot, it might not just be the street frontage? So like how the back of a building looks from across the street or the neighborhood next door? Is that what you're...
I have to think about what I'm trying to get at, but
okay.
Six makes a lot of sense to me. Five. Mm-hmm.
Five is basically saying we don't want gaps between buildings. We don't want, you know, unbuilt space. We want buildings that actually frame the streetscape. Sometimes it's called the building wall or the street wall in a lot of codes. We have a pretty good street wall right now on some of our streets, but definitely not all of them. And when redevelopment occurs, our existing standards require parking lots, if they're provided, to be behind or to the side of a building. And so we're anticipating keeping that standard as we go forward.
I read number five is to say that it's in some cases it's beneficial to have buildings that are built up to property, so is there a lot of concerns that back. But that presumably the code would allow for like courtyard, entry courtyards, and so buildings aren't always there.
Right.
It's required in the village. It's just that that's a benefit of when
sidewalk help clearly define the vertical edge. Mm-hmm. just something in the wording that throws me in.
Sure.
Maybe it's close to the sidewalk or relatively close to the sidewalk.
Where is, when buildings are built up to the sidewalk or something.
Yeah, that's just.
Yeah, when buildings build up to the sidewalk, they clearly need to find the vertical edge of the street scene.
Anything else on five or six? About variety. So one of the things we talked a lot with City Council about last time was the idea of not having a code that requires things to be too uniform, that you allow a lot of flexibility for development, a lot of variety in shape and size and even in height, so that it lends interest, visual interest to the district. Thoughts on that one?
Number seven, again, just trying to differentiate between a standard and a purpose statement, but in the second sentence, does it, should the, should it read, streetscapes are in scale with existing smaller buildings when their mass is shaped to allow light and air rather than because?
Or regardless of size of building.
Sure.
Yeah. I still want them to meet.
Regardless of their size? You want me to add that?
That's a suggestion.
Okay, moving on to eight. So this is one that I had to think about a lot and actually do a little research on. So a lot of codes use the word articulation. When they talk about facade articulation, they talk about building articulation. But there's all these different levels of articulation. And I don't want to get into that too much until next meeting, because that's part of the next discussion we're going to have. But that's what some of these words, the meaning of some of these words can be vague, I think. But the idea is that, you know, you don't have blank walls. But a modulation is something, to me, that's more pronounced. So that's why hopefully we're going to get a designer subcommittee that's going to talk about, you know, what constitutes a modulation versus just a facade articulation. But I think the idea is that the larger the facade is, or the larger the building is, the more modulation that you need to break up those masses. And so, for example, if a facade is longer than 120 feet, you might require at least one modulation that's at least 2 feet deep or 4 feet deep or some measurement, some clear and objective standard. So like the picture on the bottom right would, to me, be an example of modulation, because that facade, I'm not saying I like that building, but it's a good example of what facade modulation is versus just a trim that's put on a building that's flatter up against the wall.
What about putting things like planters, you know, that complement, so that there's either attached to the building or out a ways, some planters, say, with city, or I'm sorry, with seating, you know, some smaller trees, and they have, in Albany, they've done those little, I can't remember what they call them, they're not pocket parks, but they're just these little, every now and then, these little seating, these landscape seating areas with tables, and so it's something like that.
Well, right now we're talking about this facade of the building itself. So I guess if there's a planter that's built into the building, I think that would fit within this category. But if it's a planter that's out in the sidewalk zone, then that's going to be streetscape.
Okay, so the right, so the modulation is actually attached to the building.
Yeah,
so
we're talking about the building form tonight.
Because that, yeah, that building looks very imposing, and there's not really anything that softens it up, you know, so, you know, I'm big on planters and greenery.
I know. Well, we could think about, you know, how you could require green elements, landscape elements combined with the facade, or that could be maybe one of the choices that someone would have to further articulate a large facade or something like that.
So the idea, it may have disruption of occasion of landscape facade.
Excuse me?
So yeah. The idea that it has a disruption of occasional landscape facade on the exterior.
Well, I've seen some green, has anyone seen these green facades now that are actually planted? The whole building wall is planted.
Planter boxes or sort of recessed into the face of the building, as extensions of the building. Incorporated like seating walls or any number of different design options.
Well, even like at the Royal Building where Mezzaluna is, you know, they've got that courtyard in there, which is, I don't think they've used it to its maximum ability, but that, so is that part of what you're talking about? Because that's built into it, so it breaks up that, since it is the tallest building.
Yeah, that's part of
city.
What I call their frontage, is that corner, and there's a picture of it in here. Okay, can we move on to the next section? So we're not talking about streetscape design tonight, but I just wanted to give some context for the building design to show how it relates to the streetscape, this diagram. So this is a cross-section showing the sidewalk and the different elements within the sidewalk zone, including the street trees and planters, and then what we call a pedestrian through zone, which is the area of the sidewalk that's going to need to be kept clear of all furniture, etc., and then the building. So the zone that we're really talking about tonight for frontage standards is the area that's outlined in red in this slide. Does that make sense? And that really essentially is the property line, and where the property line meets the public right-of-way. So again, when we talked to council about this, we told them that we would bring back what we call the menu of design options to allow a developer to choose different types of buildings to meet the standard. So what we're focusing on tonight are the building and lot frontage types. Another thing you may recall from the last work that we had, remember when Marcy from Herbsworks was here and we had all these different maps of frontage requirements and different streets where they would be applied or sub areas of downtown. And the response we got from the city council is that it was way too complicated. So we were directed to simplify that as much as possible. I think it was the committee's recommendation earlier that we did have sub areas within the downtown that had different standards applied to them, but the council felt it was too much. So we're trying to do what they asked us to do with the understanding that there are going to be some variations within the downtown. So keep that in mind as we go forward with this. So I think we are going to need to call out specific street frontages. I think Main Street has a different character or quality than the rest of the streets in downtown. I think it's very appropriate to mark that as we go and to make sure that the frontage standards are going to work for Main Street, but that on some of the other streets there could be more variety than you would see on Main Street. So think about that. So we do have a lot of handouts in front of you. I gave you a folder because there's so many tonight. And we'll go through some of that, but essentially there's a handout that looks like this. It has a lot of photos on it. It's called Street Frontage Design Standards by Location. And what I'd like to do tonight is go through these with you and talk about the different types of frontages. And then just talk about which streets or areas of downtown you think those frontages are appropriate. So it's kind of a big task, but I think the committee can handle that, right, tonight? So staff is recommending that the ground floor use of the building be considered when we tell someone what standard applies to that site. And the reason for that is, do you remember the discussion about, let me see if I can find this. Remember the discussion about the Capstone building in Eugene and how we didn't want this scenario in Springfield because the building, while it's a zero lot line building built out to the sidewalk, where you have bedroom windows right next to the sidewalk. And those windows are always kept curtained off because people need privacy, and so it creates a really dead, it's almost like having a blank wall in your downtown. So what I've attempted to do is to divide up these frontage standards to address that. So what I thought would be appropriate, see what the committee thinks of this, is to require a setback for buildings with ground floor units, or at least buildings wherever a ground floor unit occurs next to the sidewalk. So right now, commercial frontage, zero setback. Residential, you can have zero setback. So you could have capstone effect right now under the existing code. So staff is recommending that we require a minimal setback that's planted. And I think 3.5 feet is a pretty good minimum to have for that. But this would mean that they have to set back their building from their property line, 3.5 feet. The reason for 3.5 is that I've looked at a lot of these, and I think if it's anything less than that, you really can't fit a good shrub in there even, or you know, you need, that's kind of a minimum size for a planter. And I think Karen, it helps get at what you're saying, is that you need more softening of edges of buildings. So I don't think this is a terrible imposition to require. I don't know that we'll have a whole lot of ground floor units that are residential, but we might.
Could you have a building that's residential in nature, but part of the building is a lobby that is on property line, but the units of the building itself are set back distinguished?
Yes. I think you probably might have a mix. And so, you you know, you may have, think of like where Karen's shop, Haven, there's residential units on 4th Street that are right up to the sidewalk. Let's just say you were designing that building from scratch, you could at least provide that, you know, where those units were in the back, you could provide the setback, but in the front, you'd be right up to the sidewalk. Or if you have a lobby, it could be right up to the sidewalk. It's just where those residential units, individual units are along a perimeter that you would require that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So this photo here is an example of that. It looks like it might be achieved through a planter instead of an in-ground. I don't think it would matter, it could be either way. It could be either in-ground planting or it could be built up, but I think it's gonna have to be a permanent fixture for this to be work.
Talk about adaptive use.
Mm-hmm.
Are we thinking of just adaptive use within commercial? Or does that apply to residential as well? We cross that boundary, so
mm-hmm.
is there a conflict in that in any way?
Mm-hmm. I knew you were going to ask that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of that, believe me, too. But it probably wouldn't hurt to have 3.5 feet of landscaping either, you know, unless it's a storefront. And I suppose they could modify the facade later on if they wanted to push it further out. I don't know, it's just an idea. It's the best thing I could come up with based on the concerns expressed on.
I like it. The 3.5 sounds a little arbitrary. Making it even 4, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, every few inches is cost.
Yeah.
To a developer. And
yeah, that's true. Yeah, that 6 inches might amount to something.
But I looked at, you know, I've seen some that have like 1 foot or 6 inches. It's not enough. So again, all these dimensions can be played with. You know, if people have a good reason, let me know. Or if you see other examples. Okay, so I think, well, here's another image of that. So these were drawings that Marcy did, our consultant that we used to have, that showed that again. Do you think that's clear for anybody that's going to look at this, that they understand what that means? If these were used in the code, do you think it would be clear? Okay, so let's switch over to the handout. Can we do that? Just street frontage design standards by location, and just go through these and see if they make sense. A lot of these seem like they're very similar, and that's because they're, most of them are taken from downtown Springfield, the photos. But we have, in the previous discussion of the defining characteristics of downtown, we did identify that we have a lot of recessed entries and recessed facades on Main Street, and that that provides some of that articulation of the building form, and it also provides weather protection for entries. And it also provides a little bit more space along the sidewalk, since our sidewalks are relatively narrow. And so what we heard when we discussed that last time was that that was a good idea to continue that pattern, or to at least allow someone to do that. Doesn't mean they have to.
I would hope to encourage.
Yeah, so on this first page, so you see the way this is set up is that you have a photo of a frontage option. And these first ones are commercial ground floor only, so we're not talking about residential. And we're talking about different ways that the building could meet the street. And then on the right side of the table, you'll see in the vertical columns, Main Street would be Main Street, that the option would either be permitted, required, or not permitted on Main Street. Plan district is intended to mean just anywhere in the district that's not Main Street. Washburn Edge would be anything that borders on the Washburn Historic District. And west of Mill is talking about anything west of Mill. So that was an attempt to get at some of the granularity of design standards without having to be too overwhelming to people. So I'd like your feedback on whether or not you think that's a good approach to be more clear. And then, more importantly, whether or not you think these particular options are good options in those particular areas. So the first one, storefront, really is kind of our traditional Main Street storefront, what we have right now. A lot of our buildings have this already, especially our historic buildings. And so staff's recommendation is that that type of frontage should be required on Main Street. Because remember, we're only talking about 8th Street down to Mill. And then if we want to have that continuous active frontages, that's the best way to do it.
So for the recess entry frontage, it would be required for each business or each kind of separate building. And it seems if you have a number of small buildings that could get pretty choppy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So maybe it's not required. Maybe it's just permitted.
I mean, I certainly like it, but appropriate to require it for every type of thing.
Yeah, I agree. You do want to have some allowance for variety and differentiation.
Yeah, they might start all looking the same.
So make that permitted, do you think? Not a required?
Does it have something to do with maybe the distance of frontage a building has as well? Mm-hmm. Or are we making things too complicated?
Well, each of these you could drill down, you know? I mean, that's why, and I'm trying to keep it at a certain level, but I'm with you, you know? A lot of codes really drill down to that level of detail, and I think we can, if you think that's appropriate.
I would suggest having it as a permitted design option. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like earlier you mentioned there would be a menu, so
right.
They have to incorporate, say, you know, 3 out of 5 or
exactly
whatever, and that can be
one of the 5
options.
So when we have the articulation standard, that could be one of the options that they can pick to articulate their facade if it's more than 60 feet or if it's more than 100, you know, depending on the width of the building.
Yeah.
A certain number of design elements would be required.
Linda, a question. What are the active use standards that are referenced?
They're not developed yet. But they have to do with the amount of glazing on the front
sure.
of the building.
Okay.
So we talked about that when we did the design plan with Crandall Rambula several years ago. We have maps. But yeah, it mostly has to do with the frontage and the amount of glass.
So is it maybe something to circle back to as we're
yes.
a placeholder and something
mm-hmm.
to circle back to if we come to those. So if those are going to be required, compliance with those is required, we may need to take a closer look at the dimensional element of that standard, if it's a hard, you know, first 20 feet or a percentage of the frontage length or something along those lines, so that you don't have, for a narrower building, unintended consequences about door placements, window patterns, designs.
Yeah, and the way that I'm thinking of the active use standards is that they won't be applicable everywhere. They'll be applicable on certain streets like Main Street, or that's another thing I want the committee to weigh in on is which streets. Because before when we did this, I think we identified Main Street, A, not South A, but A, and we identified Fifth as a street that should have active frontages. But I want to circle back to that again. But I think as we go through this, it'll be helpful for us to. So the number four, the stoop and terrace, this, I don't think we have this type of frontage right now that I can think of in our downtown. But it is a pattern that I think might be nice to have, that someone might want to build. I suggested that it probably would not be appropriate on Main Street just because of the grade change and we don't have slopes. If we were Seattle or somewhere with hills, we might allow that, but... that was just my thought, is that that one probably wouldn't work on Main, but.
I think in this map, the northern boundary where shares a common boundary of the Washburn neighborhood, most of the properties are relatively level, and maybe it's about C Street, they're all elevated. I was trying to think where that, you know, this condition would probably be a natural.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, hadn't thought of that. That's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So John, am I hearing you saying that it might be with Washburn permitted? Or
I would, yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that's what you have currently.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be appropriate there. Certainly.
Any more on the first four? Washburn map, if it's helpful. So it's not a very good one, but anything that's on the northern edge that's colored red with the blue arrows, that's where you have that. It's kind of a weird boundary.
I don't think most of those are parking lots.
Yeah.
We'd be able to do what you're in Washburn district edges, similar to West of Mill. I think those two can have similar forms. Such as a stupid terrace.
So how would these standards apply to building with frontage along Fifth Street between B and A?
Well, can you see how the lot configurations are on that map? I mean, they're different. So you have lots that have their north-south dimension, their long dimension on A Street, and then on Fifth. Is that the library study?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What they are planning to do is span that alley. They're planning to vacate the alley for
mm-hmm.
that building.
Mm-hmm.
And to make an L in the alley so that it still connects, but it goes the other way.
I guess, so in that instance, it would just be, they would be considered considered within the plan district.
Yes.
Is the category that would fall.
Yes. Another thing for the committee to think about is civic buildings could be exempt from all these standards too. They could or they might not be.
That they're specific enough that they.
You know, should a library have to conform? I, you know, staff could argue that the building form and the streetscape should conform to the rest of the district, but the building itself could have a different shape or, you know, something that maybe, I don't know, something to think about. So let's go back to the frontages. I had, I think, a picture of a frontage, plaza frontage. So these are a little trickier to come up with. The four, number six, the Fort Court frontage was one that we looked at with Marcy and Earthworks. And that was something they used the courtyard of Sprout as an example of that. The plaza frontage is one that I added because I thought that there may be some uses that we would want to have in the downtown, like perhaps a grocery store or even more of a retail place that might want to have more space up front. So that's what I'm calling a plaza frontage. So say you've got a parking on site for something like a grocery, they're gonna have to have parking. And that you wouldn't just have a narrow sidewalk in front of that. You'd want to have probably more space. So that could be a plaza frontage. And this picture on the screen is another one that could be considered a plaza frontage. So it has more of a setback from the sidewalk to allow more outdoor use in front of the building. Again, it's trying to create some other flexible options for development instead of saying you have to do it like this.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get more input on some others that would work. But it still maintains that character and that scale. And the walkability of the downtown. The forecourt, I think, is a little tricky to understand, so I think I have a few photos of that. This is one I wanted to go over with you. So the forecourt would be like this diagram on the left. And again, we had the example of the Sprout courtyard. The idea of this, I think, is if it's a commercial forecourt, it would have shops or storefronts or restaurants or something on those inside walls with maybe the tables and chairs or just landscaping or whatever out front. But the reason I put this picture below with the gates is because this is one, there's an example of this, the Lane Community College building in downtown Eugene. It's relatively new. They have a forecourt frontage, but they have it fenced off with security gates. So I don't know what people think of that. It's great, that building's awesome to have in downtown, but is this really what you want in your downtown, in a fenced off security gate? So I think there could be other ways of doing that, but I think the goal would be to have it be open to the sidewalk. What do you folks think of that?
Well, it definitely has its trade-offs. I'm aware of jurisdictions that require, or not require, but they allow, you know, this type of courtyard space or street fronting open space as an option for satisfying a design menu. Mm-hmm. As part of that require recording a public access easement over it.
It encourages loitering.
Security and crime and other issues, you know, do potentially have a potential for becoming a problem, and especially if, you know, that can have a greater effect on the attractiveness of that space and its ability to activate its streetscape and fencing. So, that's a tough one.
It could be one of those scenarios where you know, it could say forecourt frontage allowed, and all these districts or most of these areas, but on Main Street, you can't have a fence, or, you know, you could have a fence if it's on some other street.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it depends on what the use is within the building and in front of, if that was a restaurant space or a really activated retail space, the likelihood of, you know, somebody camping there or doing something, you know, is less likely. So it's more of a decision that would be up to the developer to figure out how to best use their square footage and not create an attractive nuisance for their tenants.
Mm-hmm. They have a lot of these kind of things in downtown Eugene, and you'll notice there's a lot of controversial people that are in those areas.
Think about this issue.
Well, in that particular instance, I mean, I think there's valid reasons for security lights required.
Sure.
It would have been good had they put, you know, just some suggestion of landscaping, even if it was maybe the light or something, mm-hmm. to just soften that,
right.
that edge on the outboard. But I don't know if it's one of the reasons.
Yeah, and one of the things I like about the Sprout one is that it is, isn't that elevated above? And I was thinking, you know, a low masonry wall or planter, again, that 3-foot level, you know, just to separate it out. And then maybe you just have a gate at the opening, you know, where the step is, or if it's at grade, just right at the doorway instead of across the whole forecourt. I just think, you know, this, it just ends up looking.
It's a prison.
Prison-like when you have so many security fences like that. Understand why people want them. Well, give that some thought, and when we bring back more draft language, we can finesse that some more and then talk to more folks about that.
Cross that bridge when you get there.
Yeah. But the forecourt frontage, I mean, what do people think? I mean, what we do want to maintain on Main Street is that street wall, that full street wall. And so if you start allowing more of these to occur, that's why I thought it might not be appropriate on Main Street. But what do you guys think?
I agree.
For number 6.
What happens when a building turns the corner? Could it be on a side street? Could
mm-hmm.
it occur?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's what Sprout had. They have a courtyard on both sides, don't they? They have it on A, and then they have it around the corner where the brewery is.
To me, it's a lower speed limit kind of area
mm-hmm.
when you're dealing with these kind of things.
Would it, at least in terms of activating the streetscape, would it be more desirable to have sidewalk, seating along the sidewalk for a restaurant like along Plainstown, or something along these lines that, although it may detract from the amount of building frontage itself, and it's still providing that active space
mm-hmm.
that is energizing the overall streetscape without
yeah.
infringing or diminishing the amount of sidewalk that's available for
right.
just public other public use.
And just think if somebody came in and wanted to do a full block development, you know, this could be awesome.
Right.
With shops all in the courtyard, you know.
But again, I think it. When you're talking about building square footage and, you know, land value and return
right.
on investment, it's really something that would be a market-driven decision
for
as
sure.
to whether or not they see the value in incorporating something
mm-hmm.
along these lines at the expense of reduced building square footage.
So would there be any reason to not permit it in the code?
Okay.
Or just let it happen if the market wants it?
I don't
no.
see
yeah.
it.
It might be that all these are permitted everywhere. Okay, so on to the residential ones. Number 7. We talked about privacy setback frontage already. And we are going to talk a little bit about encroachment. So encroachment is any kind of a balcony or something that juts out over the public right-of-way, so over the sidewalk. And I have another handout in your packet about those. So the next one, stoop and terrace. Again, this is one that seems like everybody liked when we did the previous planning work with Crandall Randolo. So again, these are the residential ones. Essentially, it allows a deeper setback up to 10 feet from the sidewalk edge, from the right-of-way, so that you can have your little entry gardens, stoops, porches. And then upper level encroachments could utilize that setback area somewhat.
It's not a Main Street kind of thing. It's definitely everywhere else but Main Street. All of the apartments that are around now, the existing ones, are all above commercial space, with the exception of the one on South A. And that's, you know, for all the time I spent over there, I mean, you're just looking right in there. It's right there, you know, and there's no privacy. So I think if someone were to do a completely residential unit, I think they should be required to have something like the stoop and terrace frontage.
For commerce, it goes into work as well. The average male.
No, I'm talking about if it were a total, you know, ground floor.
It
has
to be commercial. I mean, not completely commercial, but it's completely residential. Mm-hmm. But if it's partial commercial land, which is the reasons why you have a downtown, otherwise it's just a residence, you need the average male. Will find a parking spot if they can't get to the store within 5.5 seconds from where they parked, they move on. That's an actual statistic. That's reasons why they don't like to go to malls, but they do like to go to closets because they have 5.5 seconds they can get to the store and leave. So if you have all residential area in a downtown, which is basically saying you're in a suburb, a downtown, which counteracts all the treatment of it, then you have a problem. If you have a commercial that's set back too far away from the main entrance area, the mail is not going to shop, so you've got already 50% of your market that's going to ignore downtown.
There's research on this. He's absolutely right.
Yeah, I know.
You know, some of these, like the stoop and terrace, like I'm thinking of Orinco Station. It's kind of a famous development up in Hillsboro. And, you know, they have a lot of, like, doctor's offices that are in these stoop and terrace buildings. Some of them are on the, like, lower, like, subterranean a little bit, and then the residents up above. But that's not a downtown. It's more of a mixed area. And so I agree with Shannon.
Yeah, anything but Main Street, I'm totally cool with it. Mm-hmm. Just not Main Street. Main Street is the epitome of downtown.
And then again, forecourt for residential is similar, but you know, it's just coming up with some of the size standards on them. I'm not sure that some of these size standards are really required, and that's why I'd really like to talk more with architects about what makes sense for the depths, for example, if that makes sense from the perspective of a residential unit. And some of these just could get deleted if they're not necessary. And then number 10, courtyard frontage. This is one I kind of added because I was just looking for some other examples. But, you know, this is one that might work in some sites in the downtown, like off a side street where they want to do this type of a frontage, which can be really wonderful.
Yeah, it's definitely not a main street.
Though this would be wonderful to see on a side street, that's for sure.
And then parking frontage, so there'll always be some parking sprinkled around, hopefully not too much of it. But these need to be codified, and I haven't done much work on these, so basically there'll be a planted setback probably 5 feet wide, or there might be one that's slightly narrower that's got a wall, low wall, like on the following page, number page 6. The black and white drawing that was from our Glenwood code that just shows that low wall. And I think the picture at the top of page 6 is probably more likely of what you probably want or get in a downtown. It's more of a hedge, you know, full hedge, just with greenery. And so the issues with these are, of course, security, crime, you know, keeping it level, keeping the levels low enough so that people don't hide behind them, and they still are enough to screen the parked cars. Do those make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So this is only where you have a parking lot frontage along a street that's visible from the sidewalk. Okay, and then page 7. Yeah, we're talking about parking garages and structures. I know it's probably out there in the future, but our code should address them in case they do occur, that they fit in. So there's really two different kinds. A parking garage is one that really just pretty much looks like a building that's got other uses on the ground floor. Or a parking structure is more like open decks that might have detail at the bottom. Or partial retail at the bottom.
I don't see it being appropriate for the Washburn Edge. I do see it appropriate for the west of Mill, though. But when you're dealing with right next to residential so directly, you're dealing with one, a traffic issue with cars, a noise issue, a kind of a foreign element issue. So I kind of think it conflicts everything with the Washburn connection. It just seems too heavy too quick.
Well, the thing about the Washburn Edge is that there are some that front, the boundary fronts on an alley. And so, you know, the other objective is to get cars utilizing the alley for parking access. And so, you know, I think we want to be as flexible as possible of allowing parking to access from alleys. And so, again, it's going to be a case by case.
You could build that in as an exception pretty easily, except
exactly.
For a long time.
Yeah.
And I think in the draft on 13, it says not permitted within 50 feet of a property line abutting a residential zone.
Oh, okay. It's not very.
So it still would allow it, but.
I would agree with you. Even though it might not be directly fronting, you're still going to have sight lines.
Right.
You know, from elsewhere within the district, especially if you're talking about a multi-story building.
That definitely
can really have some kind of consequences.
Yeah.
Car alarms, car braking, all that stuff.
It's really tricky on these because even if they do the liner building, you know what liner buildings are, that's the stuff that looks like a regular mixed-use building. On the ground floor, sometimes they're two levels high, but even if they go the extent of investment to do that, you always still have these decks that are hanging out up above that. And not a whole lot you can do about it. Really.
It will deter purchasing the house.
Some of these drawings in here are from our Glenwood code, the colored ones. So again, I think we need to at least have some basic standards for these in our code. And then So do those make sense? Generally?
Inlet 13 relates to Washburn Edge.
And with number 12, I mean, it says all frontage options 1 through 10 are allowed along the street frontage. So, you know, I guess maybe you could have a parking garage mixed-use building that fronts on Main if it was accessed by a side street or an alley. If it has liner.
So in that case, you'd allow for the... It's a mixed-use building with a parking garage?
No, we'd have to change that.
The situation with having it open and closed from the main street,
yeah,
it automatically slows down the traffic dramatically if they're worried about either going in or going out. Compared to going on a side street.
Yeah, some of the codes I looked at, for parking garages, mostly they were larger communities than ours, but they were recommending that the short dimension of the garage be at the front of the street, be at the fronting or the primary frontage street.
Do you think any of the parking structures in downtown Eugene give comments on some of them? Because they're all a little bit different.
Yeah,
some
I was
have retail
trying to find
underneath
some images.
And
yeah, I have not really looked at those that carefully. I looked at the Broadway Place one because I do go to that bakery, the Noisette,
mm-hmm,
on the corner, but I couldn't find a good picture of the parking garage itself that's behind it.
I'm just wondering which have been considered more successful than others.
I don't know. The one that has the brick and the artwork, the tile work on it, on is it Oak or Pearl, where the Oregon Art Supply is? That one seems like it's able to keep the retail. I mean, Oregon Art Supply's been there forever. The Overpark on 8th and Willamette, that seems to keep the retail. Right now there's a vacant space. The rug dealer moved out.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that front on Willamette Street seem to keep those leased pretty well. It's usually like hair salons or there's a Doc's Pad or one of those places on the corner. Clothing shops. But you know, that's a good pedestrian street right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the bakery. There's a lot more about parking garages that you'll see in the code text, but there's a lot of these codes that I've looked at, they recommend putting parking garages, if you're going to have them, where the retail will be successful.
It is.
And it's, you know, you weigh things and it. Demand on space became so great, you know, for parking, what would we rather have it, consolidated, or do we want it spread out?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, already the Washburn, the first block of the Washburn gets all the downtown parking, you know, and well, is it, you know, pretty soon it's going to get more and more, and we might say, well, we'd rather have a parking garage that's...
Well, for next time, you know, keep this in mind. Start thinking about the Washburn, you know, buildings that front on that and what kind of buildings would you get. I just happened across this one. It's like, well, there's a 3-plus-story building next to something that's like old. It doesn't look like our building, but is that really terrible?
Where is that, do you know?
I don't know. Maiden Lane, wherever that is. I don't know, it's really hard to find images of this because here's our the diagram on the left is
Herbs Works tried to codify, tried to diagram what our existing code permits, and you can see it doesn't permit much, because that's like, that much of their development is not developable under the current code with the way the setbacks are. And I just think, look at this. It looks really ugly in a diagram, but that's a big chunk out of their developable space. And so I think we really need to come up with a more flexible standard for this that makes sense. Because nobody's going to build something that looks like that.
At the same time, though, the Washburn is kind of a fragile area. It wouldn't take much to make it wither.
That edge is very mixed.
So
more businesses than actual residences, even
right.
though it's residential mm-hmm. by nature. But it's
if they want to have a building an entire block, go to Eugene. If they want to have businesses that can last a long time, go to Springfield.
Mm-hmm. So that's all the slides I have, but I do have some more handouts. So thank you. Great work, Katie. Thank you. There's another one in your list, in your stack there, called Frontage Design Options Architectural Projections. And it has a picture of a sign with a bird on it.
That must be Portland.
Nope, it's in the end.
did we arrive at a ground floor height?
We're still ranging between 20 and 25.
For Main Street ground floor?
Mm-hmm. And I'll bring that next time when we meet.
So if we had a projection, mm-hmm. It's going to be pretty darn tall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So for balcony encroachments, they're absolutely fantastic, but again, it's not a Main Street kind of thing.
Yeah, so all of these ideas, when we showed this to council and the historic commission, other groups, people really were responding positively to projections. Some of the internal staff aren't quite on board yet. Because of the narrow street profile and the fact that you've got street trees and signage and all these other things. So, but there was a lot of response to this type of articulation in buildings.
I've got one.
On any facade. So I wanted to bring that back for your consideration. And if they do project out over the public right of way, we are going to have a numeric standard for that. So,
just for the sake of discussion, what are staff's current misgivings about?
I think it's just because it's new for them that we don't have this now. We don't have this condition now, other than awnings. We don't have anything that projects.
So just projections in general, not necessarily.
Because it's the right of way.
Living space projections. Just any type
of
projection.
I think it's in general, even balconies. The only balconies we have right now are the Emerald Arts Center, and really, they're just these little pasted on. They're not usable balcony space.
But how would a balcony that's up high enough, like an awning, be encroachable? Considered encroachable?
Well, here's the right of way, the vertical plane.
All right.
So here's your sidewalk edge, and if you project up. Here's your building wall. So this is the sidewalk out here.
Yeah.
And you want to stick something out over the sidewalk.
But
that's
how
a
is
projection.
That how is that different than an awning? We have awnings.
Right. It
so it isn't. So why?
Different.
That's why I don't see where
that's why I said we only have
an issue. I mean,
because
it's part of the articulation of a facade.
Right.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, if it were a second story residential, retail downstairs and then second story with balconies,
The only thing I can think of, go ahead.
No.
The only thing I could think of is an awning shouldn't be as, a balcony shouldn't be as wide as an awning should be, because it just seems really extreme, since I've seen so many downtown awnings.
Yeah, right.
Usually the concern is
yeah.
it's going to And obviously, the taller, higher up the building you go, the less of an issue, but the projections encumber being able to conduct, maintain utilities and repair the street, do other things within the public right of way that are necessary sometimes. Awnings and other weather protection along the sidewalk, in that instance, they usually make them so that they're, or require them to be detachable, or you can move them out of the way, and that type of work needs to take place. But I mean, for a balcony, I mean, that's an easy way to address that. You just say nothing lower than whatever the typical backhoe hugging is gonna be.
Yeah.
Although the buildings at that SRDC redid in the third block, the three contiguous buildings all have fixed metal awnings.
Mm-hmm.
And with the blade signs underneath, and that made a big difference, because that side of Main, you know, once you get past the what we used to call the Rockstein obstacle building,
mm-hmm.
optical building that sets back, everything is very flat, and there's still a lot of flatness on that. And then you have Jim's Landing at the end, which kind of, helps break it up. But that was one of the reasons why we wanted to put the audience on there, just to break up that flat.
So if you're in the balcony, basically, you don't want to have it. There should be a regulation on how extended it should be out there, because you don't want it more than how many feet. Mine is 4 feet. So that's
okay.
Pretty, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's a good dimension. And then we have to specify the vertical clearance underneath all these
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right now I think I have the draft shall not exceed 4 feet from the face of the building for awnings or marquees. So hopefully I'll have all this ready for you for the next meeting, the text as well. Assuming that you think these are good things to have. So here's those same pictures that you got on your. The other thing about visual transparency between balconies and sidewalks, what people think of that, I think it's nice, but maybe it's not a must-do.
No. I think if there's, like a wrought iron or something with a design, I don't think it needs to be transparent like that.
And then sometimes we get complaints that they just become storage, units, because people need storage for bikes and all their outdoor stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So then you can have a lot of clutter along the street, and so that's another thing to think about with these. Okay, so thumbs up to that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Any concern?
No, looks good.
Yeah, we wish, right? We wish we did something like this in Springfield. So, then there's the Otto Petitia Theater.
The Wilders Theater, drawn by yes, drawn by Otto Petitia.
That was a projection that had to get a special permit, as I recall, for the marquee. And then here's the picture of the old Mackenzie Theater that used to be there.
Wow. Before my time.
Wow.
I went to a lot of movies there.
Mm-hmm. You remember that one, Steve?
Oh, yeah.
That was there even when I was here.
I was there the night it opened.
Wow.
And then, I've learned a lot because I didn't really know what a marquee was.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get into all this semantics for this project. Comments on these awnings? I tried to show a whole bunch of different styles and materials, but the fact is they're permanent, they're not just tacked on. Right now, our code requires weather protection. And so I don't think we should require awnings. I think, you know, with how narrow our sidewalks are, I think that should be a choice of the developer. What do you guys think?
You know, I think it depends on, you know, the rest of the building.
I personally don't like awnings. They get grimy over a period of time. They look dated.
Well, the metal ones are bad.
You can all do that. The situation is, it's a public relations thing when you're having that. You're saying to your community, I'm going to protect you with the weather, versus you guys on your own. You guys have to figure out the sidewalk situation. I like
these awnings better than the fabric awnings. They feel like they're more integrated within the architecture.
Yeah.
Lighter.
Yeah, the metal ones don't, you know, those don't turn into looking grimy. But I know, you know, there's several awnings downtown that are
pretty rough. Very expensive.
Well, you know, the one in front of Teresa's is ready to fall down.
It's definitely a participation in with your community. Otherwise, you just feel like, I'm just here to get money from you guys. I don't care what happens to you.
But
you slip and fall in front of us,
But there is some charm and character personality to some of the awnings, like if you have a bakery or a traditional style bakery and you have a black and white awning. And, you know, again, they have to, those eventually fall apart, so you have to.
That's where
it comes up. We tried to do the maintenance code, and that was just, we can't do that, you know? It's like, holy shit.
So these canopies, this thing on the lower right, I would say I'm recommending that we don't permit these because of these poles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just more clutter, and I don't think they're needed.
No.
Anybody disagree with that, or?
Yeah, that one's not.
They definitely does it, so. Mm-hmm.
They can do it on their other, you know, when it's not the street, they can do it somewhere else on their site. They just couldn't do it on the sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
a public sidewalk.
If I'm texting, I don't want to hear it.
Okay, good. And then I think there was one more, wasn't there? The corner entries treatments. These are just examples. The direction from council was not to require corner buildings to engage this corner, but it's an option.
Smart.
So I think we should have an option for that, and if they have, I think we have some language about the entrance being located in a way that still allows retail at the corner. So we'll incorporate that. And then this last page was about the parking structure, just some visuals of those. The design problem, as I see it with these, is that they tend to be really horizontal because they're just horizontal stacked decks. And so that's why they don't really fit in with your downtown, because there's nothing else in the downtown that looks like that. So just, I think, you know, incorporating some vertical element into the facade really helps a lot.
Well, we've looked at a lot of them. I mean, way back when with Crandall Arandama, and you know, it's going to be a massive, big horizontal building. But we saw some that were actually not bad. I mean, you know, if you have to have them, make them the best that you can.
And the committee did a whole work session on this, and I have all the notes still, and I used them for this. So all that work is being incorporated. All right, well, that's all I have, but you still have one action item, and that is, I'm requesting, since there's so much detail in some of these architectural standards, I'm requesting that the committee consider assigning a subcommittee to look at design, some of the design details. And I know we have two designers on the committee. I've talked to Kip. He agrees that he would do it if the committee decides to want to have a subcommittee. And Those people would be asked to meet with staff a couple of times between, probably between now and our next meeting or over the next month. But they would be during work hours, like between 9 and 5. So, A, would the committee support having a subcommittee? And the subcommittee would report back to this committee, and they would provide architectural recommendations that would be incorporated into the next draft.
It's a worthy cause. Who wants to join in?
Right now, I'm too busy to do that.
Me as well.
I'll be on it, Craig, Bill.
That's how I feel about it. I'm buried, but...
That's okay.
Yeah. I feel like I should.
We may come up with something you don't like, so...
Well, it's just, you know, it's all that minutia, and it'd be really difficult to have the committee meetings spent going through that process. So, but we'll do the best we can. But I just thought if there were people that might be able to work a couple of times or even once, it would be helpful. We did this with our Glenwood Code. We had a subcommittee that met to get into some of the details.
Yeah, a block of 2 hours or 3 hours.
We could do it in one fell swoop like that, or we could do like 2 one-hour sessions. We can do whatever works for folks.
I can do something in that direction.
But it's going to be weekdays, sometime after 9 a.m., because that's when KIPP is available.
Yeah, that actually reports better for me.
And it could either be at City Hall, or we could do it somewhere else, if that would be better.
City Hall works for me. My office is 100 feet away.
Okay. So does the committee want to take a vote of whether or not you'd like to appoint a subcommittee?
Well, I think Corbis already here.
Okay, but you need to do it formally for the minutes.
I will have to excuse myself from it, unfortunately. Yeah, I'm too busy right now.
Oh,
so
cool.
Okay. But you would vote for it.
I support it.
You support it.
Well, you said KIPP would do it, right?
Yeah,
so.
KIPP sent me an email. He would do it. And he's in favor. He said if the committee wants to appoint a committee, that he would be willing to participate.
I would make a motion to support having a committee to look at this, and maybe we could break it down into at least two sessions, and at best, we all go to both sessions, but maybe, you know, we give it our best shot.
Second.
All in favor?
In favor.
Aye. Okay, and then now I need names, because I'll email you. John Tuttle? Shannon?
Yeah.
Are you available in midday?
Me?
Yeah.
I have employees.
Okay.
And my business partner, I get to her under the bus to make her work.
And Steve? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, 4 people. Did I get everybody? Thank you very much. Is there anything else on the agenda, Steve?
I don't think so. Chair adjourned.
So the next meeting is on a Wednesday, not a Thursday.
March 22nd. That's our Thursday.
Did
22nd is a Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh, Thursday. Okay.
The April meeting is the Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah. Just warning you in advance, because it's not our regular time.
Wednesdays are 40% of my business.
But I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get through all of it in the next 2 meetings. Okay? And I'll do my best to send you documents in advance, but I can't promise.
And the next one's really not going to start until 6.
That's correct. Yeah, there's another.